Most new mothers say they want to breastfeed. Most also say it was harder than anything they expected. So why are so many still left to figure it out alone?
Today we're going to find out. Through a new mom who lived it, a physician who treats it, and an innovator who's trying to change it. This is Patient Innovations.
Dear listeners, welcome back to the Patient Innovations podcast brought to you by Healthcare MN. I am Rashmi Kandwal, and joining me today is my co-host,
Colleen Rogers. Hi, everyone. I'm excited to be here, and welcome to our podcast.
Today, we are talking about breastfeeding, and right away, I want to acknowledge something. Breastfeeding is often described as the most natural thing in the world, and it is natural, but natural doesn't automatically mean easy, and I am glad I'm sitting here with five women. They all agree with me.
Breastfeeding is also learned. It's physical, emotional, and deeply personal. It takes place in the middle of one of the most demanding periods of a person's life, and how mothers are supported through it or not supported shapes everything that follows.
I agree. And for many others, the reality of feeding a newborn looks nothing like what they expected, including me. There are a lot of challenges, supply questions, pain, exhaustion, logistical complexity, and emotional weight that very few people prepare you for.
And to that point, it doesn't happen in isolation. Breastfeeding and pumping are connected to postpartum physical recovery, to mental health, to identity, to relationships, and to whether a mother has the time, the resources, and the support to make it all work.
And that's why exactly, you know, what it all means is if we want to support breastfeeding, we have to support the whole mother. Not just like milk supply, but her body, her mental health, her access to care that acutely meets her where she is.
And for today, let's be clear about something from the very beginning. Today's conversation is about supporting mothers. It's not about prescribing a specific feeding outcome. Breastfeeding, pumping, formula, combination feeding, donor milk, every path is real and every mother deserves support for her journey.
And so today, as we always do, we are exploring three perspectives. First, we're going to hear from Brittany Runk, a social content creator and storyteller who has shared her own deeply personal feeding and postpartum journey, including a NICU experience with honesty and grace.
And then we'll speak with Dr. Michelle Haggerty, a physician specializing in breastfeeding and lactation medicine. And Michelle's the founder of the Fourth Trimester Doc, who has built her practice around the idea that the weeks after birth deserve as much care as the months before.
And we'll close with Ashley Mooneyham, a scientist, entrepreneur, and co-founder of Mommy Solutions, whose work on breast pump technology grew directly out of her own experience as a mother and her commitment to listening carefully to what moms actually need.
So really, this is a conversation about mothers, honesty, and what it looks like when care and innovation actually put people first.
Let's get into it.
Let's go.
Brittany Runk is a social content creator and storyteller who shares her life, including infertility, pregnancy loss, a NICU stay, and the full reality of new motherhood, with honesty and with openness. In March 2026, she and her husband Joel welcomed their son Briggs. And her goal is simple, that women feel less alone wherever they are in their own journey. So I'm so glad, Brittany, you are talking about this. Deciding that we want to do this, we've been talking about how people don't talk enough about these things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we are glad we are doing this and covering this and that you are here to talk about this with us.
It's such an important conversation, so thank you so much for having me.
So, Brittany, if you're comfortable, we'd love it if you could start at the beginning, not just with Briggs from that point, but with the road that led to him. Mm-hmm. Can you share a little bit about your journey about becoming a mom and what that experience was like even before he arrived?
Absolutely. It was one of those things where, you know, maybe this is naive of me to think that it would just happen pretty quickly and it wouldn't, you know, I just never really thought I would struggle with infertility. And so when I was in the thick of it, I was very surprised and it was very challenging and hard. And so I remember taking my first positive pregnancy test after just a couple months of Joel and I trying, and I was so thrilled and relieved, but also not surprised. And sadly, 3 months later, in February, is when they told me at the ultrasound that there was no longer a heartbeat. And so I did go through a miscarriage. And you still think about that even to this day. And that was over 2 years ago. And so what also was surprising to me is that I thought, okay, even though I went through that, we were able to get pregnant fairly quickly after a couple of months of trying. And so that gave me some reassurance. And month after month went by, and you know, not everyone is ready to jump back in and especially after a loss. Not everyone is ready to try again, especially after a loss. But for me, I just knew how badly I wanted to be a mom. And, you know, at the time I was 35 going on 36. So I was like, the clock is ticking. There's so much pressure. We have to keep trying and keep going. And so not only that, that's pretty stressful. And so a couple months went by and we still weren't able to get pregnant. And so I had 4 failed IUIs.
Oh my God.
I know, that were unsuccessful. It was a long journey. So long story short, this is probably a long, long story, but I just trusted my gut. I remember driving home and I was in tears and just was so defeated. And I'm a faith-based person. So I remember praying in my car. Kind of brings tears to my eyes right now. And I was like, why are you putting this? Why are you putting this me in this position? Why are you putting me in this position of needing to maybe do IVF? And I just felt this loud, like, pause. Like, you don't need to. You don't need to go down that path. And that kind of gave me the permission to just slow down. Because I think so often when you're wanting to be a mom so bad, you're going to do anything and everything you can to make it happen.
Yes, we all do. Yeah.
And I'm so appreciative of the fact that I was able to give myself that break because it allowed me to explore other options. And for me, that was very, very helpful.
IVF is a tough journey. Our last episode was on IVF, mm-hmm. and you're not just alone. We had, like, you know, 3 people just talking about that topic for the full podcast episode. And it's difficult. It's when people get there, like, finally, most of the times they've run out of alternatives. So you were not alone when, like, you know, you're thinking about all the things you're thinking in your car.
Wow.
That's what happens. And I also wanted to say that I am proud of this podcast, but I also feel bad because I feel like it brings back those emotions in people, and I don't want you to go there, but it just, you know, yeah. So sorry about that,
no,
that you had to, like, you know,
no worries
remember all those painful moments, but glad it worked out for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I learned a lot.
So with everything that you went through, 4 cycles, mm-hmm. right? Miscarrying.
Mm-hmm.
When Briggs was born, and did you contemplate breastfeeding? Did you think about that in advance? And did you have an image in your head of what that might look like? And how is it going to go for you?
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. Being a first-time mom, I kind of look back at this. I had a birth plan. And I was probably a little naive with this whole birth plan because I was like, I'm going to have low intervention. It's going to be wonderful. And, you know, in what ended up happening is I needed a C-section because he was so small and his heart rate was decelerating every time I'd have a contraction. And so
it's exactly
right?
My story.
Really?
Exact same. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Did you end up having a C-section
yes.
then? Oh
yes.
My goodness.
Yeah, because the nurses in the back were saying his heart rate is dropping every time and like, go for C-section, please.
Oh my God. They were monitoring me overnight
and
I knew when the midwife switched over to the OB on call and I'm like, oh, I know where this is going. I will say though, what I appreciate as a patient is that her bedside manner, she came to me, she had so much empathy and she said, hey, you know, I'm a mom too. This is what I would do. And I asked her, I was like, well, is this an emergency? She's like, it's not yet, but I don't want it to become one.
Yeah.
And that's all she had to say. I feel like sometimes and providers are wonderful, but sometimes I'm not in the medical field at all. And so when they're talking all sciencey, it can feel overwhelming. And she was so empathetic and vulnerable and said that she's a mom herself. And that vulnerability gave me the confidence of like, okay, C-section it is, even though that was the last thing I wanted. And so speaking of that, you know, I had a vision of how the birth was going to go. Did not go the way at all. My friends with kids are like, okay, Britt, like, it's good to have a plan, but make sure you're able to pivot. And then speaking of breastfeeding, absolutely not how I thought it was going to go. And the reason for that is I was full term. I was 38 weeks and 5 days when Briggs was born, but he was a growth restricted baby. And so he was born at 4 pounds, 14 ounces.
Oh.
And so 2 days later, he had to go to the NICU. And that kind of made for a very bumpy experience, especially with breastfeeding.
A lot of moms who have NICU babies find themselves pumping before breastfeeding is viable or an option or the milk comes in or doesn't come in. What was your experience with that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was kind of a whirlwind. Like, I remember thinking, like, my brain was trying so hard to keep up with reality, because we go in, we're trying to be monitored overnight. They're saying, okay, your baby will be born within 12 to 48 hours. He was born, and we didn't know the gender at the time, which was really fun. Shameless plug. It's worth the wait to not find out. But anyway, that experience of having to pump while he was in the NICU was really challenging, because we didn't get that skin to skin. He wasn't able to latch, but I knew it was so important for him to get those calories. That's what mattered most. That was the priority. We just had to get his weight back up. And so when he was in the NICU, he had a feeding tube. They had to check his glucose levels. He had to have a little bit of oxygen support. And so, you know, when it was the right opportunity, I would absolutely want the practice. I would absolutely love when he could latch. But it just wasn't all the time. And I think in that, especially that beginning stage, we just needed to make sure he was getting the nutrients he could the easiest way possible. And so if I had it my way, I would have loved to have been able to breastfeed immediately, but it just wasn't the case. Like, we needed to make sure he was getting those calories right away. Now, the good thing is, and the NICU was, it's a silver lining. Like, no one thinks that their child's going to end up in the NICU, but the staff, the medical professionals are incredible. It was like a boot camp. I learned so much, and I was so grateful for it. But, we had to make sure that he was getting those calories he needed. And then when he was alert, when he was awake, we could practice, and we were able to latch him. And what was so cool is, with this feeding tube, we could put it on my breast while he was latched. And so he was still getting those calories while we were practicing that latch, which was wonderful. And I was so grateful for that experience. And not only that, I am surrounded by these fantastic doctors and nurses who are supporting me in this journey. So while it was difficult to leave him overnight and be away from him and have that rocky start, I'm also so grateful for that time that I had, that extra practice and resource, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. where they were able to coach me. It wasn't as much as I wanted it to be, of course, but I still was grateful for that experience. And then it was up to me to go home and pump. But I remember a nurse telling me, she said, yes, you can go home and pump, but also really focus on your recovery. I mean, a C-section was, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So that was also something I wanted to prioritize. She's like, get some sleep. You know, like, I did have my alarm set at like 2 a.m. so I could wake up and pump. And I did that for a couple of times, but there were times where I'm like, I'm going to turn this alarm off and I'm going to sleep through the night because I'm able to. And that's the silver lining of, I guess, having the NICU baby. No one wishes that. I would never, I mean, but I needed to also focus on that recovery because it was the silver lining in the experience that I never thought I would be experiencing.
So how long were you in the hospital post C-section, and how long was Briggs in NICU?
Yes. So we delivered at a hospital that actually didn't have a NICU. And so I wanted to discharge as soon as he was needing to transfer.
Yeah.
He was transferred after 2 days being in the hospital because they didn't have a NICU there. Mm-hmm. And that's when I requested to also be discharged. And so he went and was there for 13 days.
13 days.
Wow.
Okay. So during this 13 days, then, did you often go visit every day?
Every day.
Did you pump, or were you trying breastfeeding at the NICU every day?
Great question. So what was so wonderful about this experience, I will say, is that they provide so many wonderful resources. And so they did have a pump on hand. So it's amazing how time just goes so fast when you're there. And so I was able to pump every time he would feed. And that was helpful. And every time I had a chance to, I would ask the nurse, like, hey, like, he seems a little bit more alert. Like, can we just start with him latching and then see what he does? And they were always so helpful. And more often than not, they would allow that to happen, which was great.
Okay. And I have to ask this. Yeah. Did you do any breastfeeding training pre?
No.
Okay.
Wait, breastfeeding. I knew nothing. I mean, like, I would maybe look on TikTok here and there, but no, I didn't know much about breastfeeding.
No, I didn't know either. My doctor recommended a training, which I did. Oh. And then I was laughing that at the actual time when it was happening, because these were two different worlds where you gave them a they give you a fake baby and like you to try and latch and then nothing like goes the way, you know, the training 100%. Went. So yeah, I we always like find it funny.
We did a new parent course.
Okay.
And that was, they talked very high level
yes.
over yeah. breastfeeding, but it was probably a couple minutes worth. But
Brittany, I yes. love your positivity about the whole experience and finding the bright light about the NICU, et cetera. Mm-hmm. My personal experience, I had twins. One was left in the NICU, one was at home. I was pumping at home, pumping at the hospital, yes. trying to get them to latch. It was, and the NICU staff was amazing, but it wasn't what I had imagined
not
before having babies. I thought you just put them on the breast and they yeah. start feeding. And I never kind of imagined all of this other stuff like feeding tube during breastfeeding.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? And to hear your story and hear the positivity and what came out of it is just fantastic. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely... It helped me a lot to shift my mindset. Now, it wasn't always the case, especially when it comes to breastfeeding. Like, my output, and perhaps it was because of the rocky start, wasn't that great. I mean, it was maybe like a half ounce to an ounce at times. And then I remember feeling so proud because one time I had pumped and it was like over 2 ounces and I could not believe it.
Liquid gold.
Yes. I was so excited. Now, what I will say is take this advice, listeners. I went on social media. And of course, the first video that pops up was someone, and this is her story. It's great. Not judging, but she had pumped 4 ounces per side and is filling the jar, filling her freezer. And I'm like, oh gosh, like I went from feeling so joyful and elated that I got that amount to then feeling so defeated because I saw that mom that had so much. And here's what I will say that I learned in that experience. It's like so often we'll compare our journey to someone else's, but it's like, she probably maybe didn't have a NICU baby. You know, she maybe just naturally has a great output and that's wonderful for her. And so I think the biggest thing that's helped me is, you know, rather than asking yourself, am I producing enough? Maybe it's, am I feeding my baby in a way that's sustainable for both of us?
How did the people close to you, like your husband, family, friends, did they understand kind of what you were going through throughout all of this?
Yeah, you know, I will say my sister, who had twins, she also had an experience in the NICU, and so that was super helpful. Now, my niece and nephew are now 12, so that was a while ago. I have another niece and nephew who are 2 and 4, and so her twins were in the NICU for, I would say, over, I think she said 35 days. And so they were born January 14th, and they were not due until March 3rd. And so it was a long, long time for them. So that was super helpful to like ask my sister about it. And she was very encouraging. But again, it was definitely a new experience for both my husband and I. But we really just tried to appreciate the support we were getting from the medical staff. And we really tried to pay it forward. You know, there were times where we would bring them lunch. And I say that because it's so important. Like, I think those in the medical field it's a thankless job. And we really wanted to see them, acknowledge them, and feel so grateful that they were keeping our son alive. And what can we do? Even a small favor of providing them lunch was important to us. And it just, I mean, it's crazy to think this, but like, you get to know them so well. And so although you're so excited to bring your child home, I'm like, oh, I'm going to miss you. Like, I you get to know them. They become your family. And I will say, one nurse was like, well, we get like their graduation invites and we get like Christmas cards in the mail. I'm like, I'm going to be doing that. Like, you're going to hear from me. So.
No, that was so thoughtful of you. Now that you're, praising this hospital, maybe we can give a shout out.
Yeah, this was Burnsville Bridges. So I gave birth at Northfield Hospital and Clinics, and then they were wonderful too. The staff there was incredible. The nurses were incredible. And they had a NICU nurse on staff there on call who was wonderful. And then she kind of bops around hospitals. And what's so ironic was she was the one that made the call to transfer Briggs for NICU support, but she was also at Bridges Hospital the day of his discharge. So it was kind of a full circle moment of having that nurse.
So to kind of wrap up breastfeeding, when you look back at, you know, after Briggs was born to where you are now, is there something that you would like our listeners to hear, like a learning lesson from where you started to where you are now?
Oh, that's a great question. Where I started, you're learning so much as a new mom, it's incredible. I feel like with the breastfeeding journey in the beginning and the pumping journey, it definitely was a rocky start. I had a lot of expectations on myself of how it should look or having it look a certain way. And I think where I'm at now, 3 months postpartum, is this deep sense of peace and surrender, because I know that my son is being fed, even though we're supplementing. And what I want the listeners to know is I fall into this camp of middle ground, because not often is it talked about. Sometimes you have moms who are exclusively breastfeeding. Sometimes you have moms who are exclusively pumping or exclusively formula feeding. And all of those are wonderful because it's their decision, it's their choice. For me, I'm kind of in that middle ground where I'm supplementing, but I'm also so grateful every time he latches. And I'm also so grateful for every ounce of breast milk I get, because for me, I know that every drop counts. It's a benefit to him. So I feel like it's sustainable for me, but at any point, I think it's important to not put so much pressure on ourselves.
Absolutely, 100%
agree. Yeah. Yes. Like, that can feel like a lot. Like, so much when you become a new mom, it's like everything you can be second guessing. But for me, I just feel like I'm just sort of watching Briggs's cues, and you know, I'm grateful for what I'm able to do, mm-hmm. and I'm letting go of that judgment.
Yep. And when we were discussing this episode, I was sharing with Colleen that what helped me actually. So I have two boys. The first one, somebody said I should not say failed. I always say I failed at breastfeeding the first one, because I went through a very rough journey with the first one, and yes. I ended up breastfeeding the second one for 3 years to compensate for that. But
that's incredible.
That is incredible. But with the first one, and then what helped me was I was meeting somebody, and I, like you were saying, right, second-guessing yourself mm-hmm. and telling yourself that, oh, my God, why I'm not able to do this when all my friends are able to. Oh, yeah. And then I was sitting there, and this person who is also a mentor, and she has two daughters, now older, and then she's like, okay, I have two daughters, and one is completely breastfed, and one is completely formula fed. Tell me which one is.
Ooh, I love that
and
question.
That question, I was like, and that settled me in a way that nothing else ever settled me.
Yeah.
So if for people out there, you know, if you're ever thinking, like, it doesn't matter in the long run.
Wow.
But yes, at that moment, I understand, because yes, and you were talking about the same experience, Colleen, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
I think our journey as mothers and breastfeeding is our own journey. Mm-hmm. And there is so much input, especially now with social media, about what it should look like. And
yes.
if it doesn't, you feel like, so many times I felt like I was failing because mm-hmm. I could not get as much milk as I wanted. And I did the tea and I did all of the things.
Same here.
I remember at one point I said to my family, I'm like, I thought this was supposed to be fun.
Right? Yeah. Right?
It was work, you know? But I love hearing this, the positive mm. that you got out of it. Your journey is your journey.
Mm-hmm.
And we feed our babies in whatever way we can Absolutely. To help them grow and thrive. And I think that's what this episode is about.
Yes. And I look back, he was 4 pounds, 14 ounces when he was born. And now he's probably cleared 13 pounds. So
wow.
he's a growing, healthy baby yes. boy. And I'm so grateful for. And I've learned so much getting to this point, and I really do feel a sense of peace. You know, I'm still continuing to do the triple feeding, which people think that could be stressful, but I think it's all how you look at it. I think it's knowing that he is getting the supplementation, which is great. And if I'm able to pump here and there, you know, some people may recommend pumping every 2 hours. Is that sustainable for the season of life I'm in? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll pump when I can, and maybe that looks like 4 hours, every 4 hours one day, and maybe that's more consistent the next day. I think I'm not trying to, again, put so much pressure on myself. And I think we always look outward, like, oh, am I doing this right, in comparing. And how does that make you feel when you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Chances are it's not going to make you feel that great. But when you just trust yourself and celebrate the wins, it's helped me significantly.
That's very well said. And before we wrap up, can you talk about, like, content creation? What do you do?
Oh,
where
sure.
can people follow you? What do you talk about?
I love
yes,
that. Yeah. Thank you so much for asking. You can follow me at Brittany Runk on Instagram and TikTok. And I am a new mom, so I post a lot about the vulnerability there. And I also do full-time content creation for Evereve, and I'm currently on maternity leave. So sometimes I show behind the scenes there, and that's been fun. And it's a great culture there, and I love the support that I've received from all of my coworkers. And so my Instagram is it's kind of like a daily diary, if you will. It's just a fun way to document my life and share. And I've met such an incredible community over there. And so sometimes often people say like, oh, online can be so negative. I think it's finding your community. It's finding the people that you resonate with. And there can be a really great, social media can be really great when you connect with other women.
The right people.
Mm-hmm. The right people.
Yes. The right people.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thanks for all you do to give back and to get your message out there. It's really important.
Thank you so much for having me. And I feel like this message is so important. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share my story. So thanks again.
Absolutely. Thank you for this is a hard journey to talk about. So thank you for sharing it with us.
For sure.
Absolutely. Thank you. To bring the clinical perspective to this conversation, we're honored to welcome Dr. Michelle Haggerty.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Dr. Michelle is a physician boarded in family medicine, integrative medicine, and breastfeeding and lactation medicine. She's the founder and CEO of Fourth Trimester Doc, which is a private practice providing in-home medical care to birthers and newborns postpartum, and co-founder of the Center for Fourth Trimester Care, a national nonprofit supporting postpartum families and the professionals who care for them. Dr. Michelle is a mother to two angel babies and three sons, Earthside, and she brings both personal depth and clinical precision to everything she does. Dr. Michelle, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you.
And let's start with the concept of the fourth trimester. For listeners who haven't heard that term before, what is it? And why does it matter so much?
Yeah, it's, first of all, it's a term coined by Dr. Harvey Karp, who is a pediatrician. And originally the term was sort of focused on the fact that babies were born sort of too early. In other mammals, they are able to sort of run around and kind of function and eat on their own and all these things. But for babies, and our human babies, they rely on us for their nutrients, for their support, for their growth, for changing diapers, all the things, right? All that care. So they're really still sort of so required, there's so much requirements of the parental units to be able to care for them outside the womb. So they're still so interconnected. Beyond that, though, in the sort of birthing community, that we've sort of adopted that more towards the dyad as a whole. So the mom or the birthing person and the newborn, so the care of the two of them. So during the pregnancy, we have, the first, second, and third trimester, and then there's this fourth trimester after birth, this postpartum time that, in the first 3 months, but really beyond that, where, there's this shift and transition that happens that is really not very well recognized by the standard medical community, and that care is sort of lacking. And so that's why this is really critical and important, is where we put that support in that fourth trimester time, and how do we put our resources into providing care for this very critical period.
And speaking of that critical period, I'm thinking maybe the first 2 weeks postpartum, that typically comes up again and again as very intense. What does a mother actually need in those first 2 weeks, and what does she typically receive?
Yeah, frankly, it's not even just the first two weeks. Yeah. It's even much beyond that. When we think about the standard medical community and how we care for people during their pregnancy, they get, all this care during the pregnancy itself, 13 plus visits. It starts out like every month, and then you get every 2 weeks, and then every week, and then even a couple days toward the end of the pregnancy. And then the birth itself, you have 24-hour care during the birth of the baby. And then you're sort of sent off to the world.
On your own.
On your own. And then you have this 6-week visit, sort of down the line. And there's so much that happens, especially in those first six weeks. Yep. A lot of times people will come in for that 6-week visit, and either they're like sort of hanging on, or they're really struggling. Like there's so much that has already happened that really what is happening at that 6-week visit that we're actually going to be able to do much intervention. So much that we need to be doing is more so in the early times, in those early weeks and days postpartum. So, I love this term matrescence. So it rhymes with adolescence, and you think about it's this huge transition in a person's life. So adolescence, we think about the social changes, the physical changes, the psychological changes, the hormonal changes. All these things happen in adolescence. Matrescence is the birth of a mother, and so what happens? We have all those changes as well during the pregnancy. During the birth and then postpartum, right? So we have all these major shifts that happen. And if we're not acknowledging that as a medical community, as a society, as, just as a whole, then people really struggle. And that's where we have this, in our country, we have this huge maternal mortality rate, right? So it's the leading maternal mortality rate amongst developed countries around the world. When we break those numbers down, though, that's where things sort of get really scary to me, and make a lot of sense. So we have that care during the pregnancy, the birth, and then postpartum. The vast majority of maternal deaths happen postpartum. So the first year postpartum, up to the first year postpartum. And so it's not right at the birth. It's not even during the pregnancy. We have all this care, all this extra stuff happening. It's postpartum. So 60% of those deaths happen postpartum. They've looked at the data, and 85% of those deaths are considered preventable. Wow. If somebody had seen them, cared for them, acknowledged, done something, we would have 85% of those deaths that didn't happen. So this is a crisis that is not happening and that we're not addressing and dealing with in the United States. And that's, again, back to the fourth trimester, right? This time in matrescence where we need as a whole, as society as a whole, to really acknowledge and put resources into this space.
No, that is so important to talk about. But just because this episode we're talking about breastfeeding, and so where would you fit breastfeeding into this like maternal health picture? Where does that come
from? It's actually huge. It's a huge part of it. So for a number of reasons, one is the leading cause of death postpartum is actually mental health issues. So. Mm. And lactation and mental health go hand in hand. When somebody is struggling with lactation, I can almost guarantee that they're having some sort of mental health stuff going on. And if they're having an issue with mental health, again, lactation is going to be struggling. So you can't deal with one without the other. And then the other piece of it that's really critical is that, we talk about infant growth and infant nutrition, and that's, breastfeeding, they're getting babies are getting the nutrients they need. But breastfeeding in itself is actually critical for maternal health as well. So it helps decrease cardiovascular risk factors later on in life, stroke, heart attack, heart disease, hypertension. It helps decrease the risk of diabetes later on in life. It helps decrease risk of cancer, so breast cancer, ovarian cancer, endometrial cancer. Breastfeeding is an important part of the dyad health as a whole. So again, we sort of miss... We talk about so much about the calories and making sure the babies are getting the nutrients and things that they need, but we need to be supporting the maternal side as well, again, for their own health.
Let's dig into that just a little bit more. We heard Brittany describe the gap between kind of what she thought it would be, and I discussed that, Rashmi, as well, and what breastfeeding actually, what our experience was. From a clinical standpoint or perspective, what's happening in a mother's body at that time in those first days and weeks that makes this so hard?
So much. So, I mean, their sleep is disrupted. They require different levels of nutrients. The hormone shifts are wild. There's massive hormone shifts that are happening. They may have had a lot of blood loss. They're having some, anemia, issues with anemia. They may have, there's so many physical changes that happen, everything from hemorrhoids to the emotional shifts to even like weird skin stuff. I mean, there's so many things that are occurring at that time that that trying to then be able to sustain another human life is another part of that. And Brittany talked a little bit about this, that she's trying to go back and forth from the hospital and trying to support her child that way. And and that's again where I think their system is failing, is that we're requiring somebody who just went through this major traumatic event. Frankly, it's a physical traumatic event when you give birth, whether you are basically pushing a watermelon out of your vagina or having major abdominal surgery, one way or the other, this is, it's a major event. And now we're requiring her to, drive back and forth, right, and, try to, navigate do I sleep and take a nap, or do I try to get to the hospital and, you know, take care of my baby and try to breastfeed? So there's so many pieces to this that really need to be addressed to be able to support them as a whole.
Do you see mothers feeling like they're failing if it doesn't go as planned? And is that kind of where their mindset is?
Absolutely. And again, social media, I think, sort of plays into this quite a bit, because there's a lot of this comparison, and a lot of people, it seems like as soon as you get pregnant, and especially afterwards, after you have your baby, everyone has an opinion about you, your baby, how you're parenting, you know, what you should be doing, what worked for them, what, you know, then should work for you. And so yes, there's a level of shame, or sort of feeling that they're not doing enough, or have they given enough? Have they tried enough? And there's actually new data showing that 10 to 20% of people just physiologically cannot not completely breastfeed. Like they just cannot create enough calories for their babies.
Bold this.
You're right. Yeah, I was like, I wish I knew that.
Right. Which is actually new data. I mean, we previously had thought it was closer to 5%. And so it's like, oh, if I tried harder, if I did the thing, if I do all the stuff, what's that last ditch? I have a lot of people coming to me because of being a breastfeeding medicine physician, who are coming to me for like sort of their last ditch effort. Like, I've done everything else and I'm coming to you. Like, this is my, you know, my last straw. So much of it is just me allowing them, giving them space and saying, you've done it. I give them permission to, like, this is, you've done it all. Like, it is okay to now choose a different path for you and your baby, and something that more aligns with what you're working towards. And so something that more aligns with their lives, their mental health. I mean, people, they need to prioritize their mental health. That's a lot of times they're sort of sacrificing everything for this baby. And really, you know, we have so much evidence shown around being able to, when you love on your baby, that they also grow, that's also really a driving factor for growth. And if they're not able to snuggle their babies and like have that, like getting nap trapped and having, and all their focuses on is feeding, then, you know, it just sort of takes away that whole journey. And so, you know, just giving them that back is can be a lifesaver.
It is a mental juggernaut is what I,
yes, exactly.
That was the question. Actually, you already answered it. I was thinking of asking that. How do you even approach that conversation? Do you often, at this point where some mom is struggling, do you bring in pumping, and how do you how does that conversation usually?
Yeah, absolutely. Pumping or bottling or formula feeding or whatever. I mean, we just sort of talk about what feels like it resonates with them and feels like it makes sense. And then as far as the next step. What I want is for them to feel like they can sort of live their lives, do the things, spend time with their baby, you know, get out, be out in public. There's so often people are so like trapped to their homes because of feeding. Mm-hmm. I want them to be able to connect with other parents and other people that are having their own journeys as well, getting into some mom or new parenting groups. I think all of that is critical to this transitional period, and it's not just about feeding. And so, identifying what have you done so far, what feels good to you, how do you feel about a pump? Some people are like, absolutely not, I can't even look at one. They just feel very adverse to them. And some people are like, oh yeah, like this feels better to me actually, because now I feel like I've got more freedom for whatever reason. So I think that there's a lot of, it's looking at the person for their unique journey and their unique situation, which may be different for every child, as we talked about. Yeah. So you can't even, you know, go from that, what their journey was before with their previous baby, to what it is now. It's like, okay, now what does this look like for you and feels good to you?
If you could redesign what postpartum care looks like for new mothers, which you're kind of already doing in your practice, yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you had a blank state and kind of, you know, thinking about breast health and breastfeeding, what would that look like?
Yeah, it's exactly what I designed, honestly, so in my private practice, because that's what I designed it specifically around. What do I think, what did I want and feel like I needed in that early postpartum time, and what did I feel like it was missing and lacking in the standard medical care model? So it's access to to care in the home. So it's where they are. Like, so meeting people where they're at. I think there's a lot of information that you can get just by walking across that threshold and being invited into somebody's home. I feel so honored every time I cross that threshold. It sort of levels the playing field a little bit. It allows for people to see me more as a support person as a guide, as opposed to somebody who's like telling them what to do, which I think happens a lot from like sort of the doctor-patient relationship. It's allowing for time. So I don't have 10 minutes with patients. I've got an hour and a half. So I spend time with people. I see, you know, what their whole, you know, how they're feeding on their couch or whatever chair and helping them reposition so that it's in a, so that they're more comfortable. It's seeing, you know, is the house spick and span, and do they have a freezer full of milk? And so now I'm worried, okay, maybe do they have a little postpartum anxiety coming in, and maybe there's some OCD happening here, because they, you know, we want some level of chaos, some level of, you know, of, you know, not focusing so much on all the environmental stuff and trying to, you know, so hyper fixate on things. So there's a lot that I can get just by walking across that threshold that you can't get in a medical system, you know, in the clinic space. There's access to text messaging, so they text message me. So if they have issues with, you know, concerns about something that they're fearful of or that they're dealing with, like in the moment, then they can text message me and I can get a response very quickly. So it's more access to direct care as opposed to calling some nurse line that then you get the doctor like, you know, 3 or 4 days later or whatever, when that's now everything's sort of ruminating and getting sort of getting worse. So, and then it's access to multiple touch points along the way. So, you know, I see people 24 to 48 hours after they get home from the hospital or the birthing center, another couple of days later, 2 weeks, 1 month, 2 months, everything is happening very quickly as opposed to that, just that 1 6-week visit.
Mm-hmm. So, how do people get access to you? And for mothers who don't have access to somebody like you, what should they know?
Yeah. Well, I think a big thing is how I would love to transition care is having this actually covered by insurance. That's such a huge part of the lack of access to care. And I'm working on being in a network. We are in a network with Blue Cross Blue Shield right now. But the way that insurance covers lactation in general with IBCLCs and postpartum care is just lacking extremely, and it's really a struggle to try and get that care and that support. Mm-hmm. For people in general who are looking for general support in the postpartum period, I think getting connected with an IBCLC, so a lactation consultant, getting connected with a doula. There's, you know, postpartum doulas who can help in the home and help care for, you know, cooking and cleaning and helping, you know, with those new parenting things and helping with even with latch and things like that is critically important. You know, asking apps. We used to have, you know, sort of tribes, right? So like in our villages, you know, back. You know, years and years ago, and that has just become we've become so siloed in our system. Right. Mm-hmm. And so trying to build your own village or tribe back. So getting those your friends, your family members, you know, helping build that out while you're still pregnant, I think is really critical as well. You know, asking your sisters, asking your friends, your aunties, whoever, to be the ones that come in and help provide food, help, you know, hold the baby while you take a bath, help you understand help you with latch or whatever it is. I think we can really be okay with leaning back into that. But it can be hard. It can be hard to ask for that support, and we need to sort of be vulnerable and being able to do that. Having those new mama groups are really, really helpful too.
I mean, we've touched on maybe milk not coming in and milk supply and latching and not latching and formula versus breastfeeding, et cetera. We've touched a little bit on mental health. Mm-hmm. One thing, if you could say something about this, is something that I never expected was mastitis and how what that is and how you support your mothers with that.
Yeah, so this is actually a very timely topic because it's just come out that there's new recommendations around how we treat mastitis in the last year or so. So historically, we considered mastitis to be a bacterial infection where we give antibiotics then.
Just wanted to add, I had one. So I'm very, very eager.
It's very common. And then there was all these recommendations around, that was, again, floating around social media about, you suck out the clot and you can, use a haka with with a saline solution in there, or you use pumping, or you position the baby in the right way, and with all these things.
Sorry, none of that would have helped the intense pain and burning mastitis is.
Exactly. Well, and what we know now is that mastitis is an inflammatory state. So it's not a bacterial infection. It's, at least in the early stages, it's an inflammation. And so we treat it like we would do a sprained ankle or something similar to that, where we'd ibuprofen, so high-dose ibuprofen, ice and heat, so to help with sort of bringing down the inflammation. Something called lymphatic massage, it's not a massage where you're massaging the muscles. It's more like you would pet a cat or a dog, and you're sort of just moving the extra fluid around the inflamed breast tissue into the lymph nodes, which is in your clavicle and your armpit and your sternum area. And continuing to feed, so you're still using it just as you would with a sprained ankle. You still use it, but you don't extra use it. So you don't then run a marathon on it. So you don't extra pump on it either. And so you just sort of treat it as you would, you feed the baby regularly, and you sort of navigate through that. The inflammation is what the pain is from, and so if you can try and bring that down with that anti-inflammatory medication, it usually helps quite a bit within 24 hours, and then not doing all the extra things which make it drastically worse. A lot of times people will do a lot of really deep massage, or they'll do all these other things that I had just mentioned, and then the antibiotics, what we found was that the antibiotics were actually anti-inflammatory, so that's why it was helpful. But we don't need the antibiotic piece anymore. So,
okay. Thank you.
The one tip my mom gave, if it helps anyone, is, but the problem is you're so much in pain. I was crying and I was standing in front of my mom and I'm like, I'm reading this online. You need to massage this. And she's like, not me. You need to massage it because you know your pressure. You know how much you need to. So that was her tip.
Want to massage anymore. It is quite literally just petting. Very gentle petting, just started moving that fluid. I don't even like using the term massage because I think people start thinking about it as a muscle. It's a gland. It's a gland like the thyroid or the pancreas, and we would never put it like a vibrator or a massage your thyroid or your pancreas. It's such a very, very delicate tissue, so it can actually make it much worse. Ideally, though, we try and prevent that from getting to the mastitis level by helping to deal with the clogged ducts in the first place. And so, the regular feeds, trying not to over pump, using appropriate pumping. If you are pumping, using appropriate settings on the pump are all things that it can help with.
So it's kind of a vicious cycle, because you don't want to breastfeed because it hurts so bad, but you need to breastfeed to get rid of it.
Yeah, right. Well, it's not to get rid of it. It's more just to continue to allow the use of it, so then you're not causing more inflammation down the line. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Sam is sitting here thinking, I don't know what these ladies are talking about.
Not myself, but I've got your kids.
You don't want to hear about it. Yeah, yeah.
This is my personal opinion, but I think the problem is, nobody's talking about any of this before.
No.
When a mom is pregnant, when she's kind of in a right brain where she can think about these things, so start talking to them then. Mm-hmm. It just suddenly is Brittany, you, right? I had a C-section. Do I look after my body? Do I look after my mental health? Do I look after this new baby who's not sleeping, who's not wanting to latch or have the milk? And all that, and then add mastitis there, or not enough supply, add pump. I am exploring type of pumps when I was supposed to be feeding my baby, and then I also ordered, I remember, an industrial grade pump or something, because then you're getting this information from. All this should be made available before, and it's just lacking, and it's sad. My son is 7 now. So in 7 years, I'm listening to your story as if this is happening again, all over again, right? Nothing has changed. So I don't know what the solution is.
And
it's truly, it's we... in our, again, in the sort of standard medical system, we plan for this big event, the birth. Like, how often do you talk about your birth plan and, like, talking about how all the things that you want for the birth, and then we don't talk about that postpartum, right? And it's the same as talking about a wedding and not the marriage. Like, the marriage is the big part. Like, that's what we want to make sure we're prepared for, right? And the same thing postpartum. We need to really be prepared for that. And the birth, there's only so much you can really plan for and really control. But postpartum, we have so much control. And so that we don't need to be struggling. We don't need to be just barely, you know, keeping above water. We can actually thrive in our postpartum period if we have the right support and we set it up in advance. So a big part of my practice is we do a postpartum planning where we talk a lot about prepping for the postpartum, setting up your village, talking about all the things that, you know, where are you going to be staying? What does your environment look like? Who are your support people? What are you going to be eating? How do you keep yourself well nourished? How do you sleep? What is sleep going to be looking like? So all of those things, which I think is critical. Yeah.
We'll add the link to your website and contact for you as well for people listening. And as moms with kids who had these, you know, breastfeeding issues, I think it's critical you reach out for help around these issues.
Yeah, I wish I had 18 years ago when my twins were born.
And it was created because I didn't have it either. And so I really wanted to have this, you know, provide the support. And actually, my first was a miscarriage as well. And so my first experience postpartum was this feeling of, like, complete isolation and not having that. People didn't see me as a mother. I felt like I was a mother because I had a connection with this little one that was inside of me. So I knew I was a mother.
If you're like me, you'd probably already planned that baby's entire life.
Oh, completely.
Right?
Yes, exactly. We had all the plans, all the things, exactly. Yeah. And that's what's, you know, you start, you know, so when that first one is that miscarriage, it's like, how do you, the world doesn't see you as a mother, but you feel that.
Yeah.
So how do you then present that to the, you know, the world and see that in yourself? So
thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Is there anything parting you want to add that we might not have covered that, you know, mom should be paying attention to? What do they need to be thinking about when?
I think the biggest thing is everyone's journey is unique. So not comparing to other people and having all this, again, unsolicited advice that comes in. You take it with a grain of salt. You say, does this, you know, feel like it lands with me and makes sense, or does it not? And then allow it to move on. I think that is really important. And I think, you know, just you deserve support. You deserve to ask for and you deserve to get support. So reach out and get that set up for yourself so you can really thrive.
Well said. Thank you, Dr. Michelle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And for our final conversation today, we are joined by Ashley Mooneyham. Ashley is the co-founder and CEO of Mommy Solutions, a maternal health startup she founded in 2021 after her own frustrating experience with breast bumps. Mommy's has won the 2024 Minnesota Cup Grand Prize and the 2025 Healthcare MN Startup of the Year, secured NIH and Launch MN funding, and built its product around the voices of over 2,000 mothers. Ashley holds a PhD and was named the Minneapolis and St. Paul Business Journal 40 Under 40 for 2026. Ooh, Ashley, this is a long, long list. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And welcome to Patient Innovations.
Thank you so much.
Ashley, let's start with your story. What was your own experience with breast pumping that made you think there has to be a better way than this and start your business?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this company originated from living these pain points myself. And just like the stories that you've heard today, I really thought I knew what I was doing, right? I went into it. Breastfeeding went well for me with my firstborn, which I'm super grateful for because I know that's not every mother's experience. And because it went well for me, where I became really naive is that I thought that pumping breast milk would be equally easy once I went back to work postpartum. So I went back to work, I hooked myself up to the breast pump I thought would perform best for me, and I was shocked that it took me 4 pumping sessions to get 1 bottle of milk for my daughter. And I felt like the choice to breastfeed was stolen from me. And the blessing that I had was that because breastfeeding had been going so well, nursing my daughter had been going so well, I didn't immediately blame myself like so many women are ought to do during this experience. My frustration was really directed at these tools. Why am I spending hours every day pumping at maximum suction power? That's so uncomfortable for me.
So
and how is it not collecting the milk that I know my body makes and stores? So because I had that
driving frustration, and because my background is in the PhD sciences, my natural inclination was to search in scientific literature. Have there been any proven solutions to improve the breast pump experience? And I was actually surprised to see there are published studies 10 and 15 years ago showing that if you add a warm compress while pumping, if you massage while pumping, and more recently, a lot of publications on how the flange or your connection point to the pump impacts your pumping experience. There's so much knowledge out there, but again, to what we discussed earlier, it was not communicated to me before I started the breast pump experience. And then by the time that I engaged with the breast pump, I needed those results now. Mm-hmm. So that was my original experience. And when I discovered that there were known solutions, I went to search for products that would help me implement those solutions in a systematized manner, in a standardized manner, in a way that was easy to integrate into my breast pump workflow. And I didn't really find any tools that felt like I could integrate them easily and in a way that I would trust. And that was really the origin story of Mommy's Solutions, is we really wanted to bring scientifically grounded solutions to market with products that were built by moms for moms in a way that would easily integrate into that breast pump workflow.
Can you explain for our listeners what your solution is?
Yeah, well, we have multiple innovations in the pipeline, actually. I mean, there are no shortage of solutions and no shortage of ideas in terms of ways to improve the breast pump experience. But something that we're really excited about this summer is that we're launching the Pedal Soft Breast Flange. And that, again, the flange is your connection point to the pump. So in a lot of ways, it's the first thing that informs the comfort of that experience. And something that we hear from a lot of women is the breast pump is a machine. And in a lot of ways, it's an intimidating machine.
It is.
But a woman is still a human, right? Like, we are still human, even if we're using a machine to collect breast milk. So what we really wanted to do with the Pedal Soft Flange was really see that woman behind every ounce at the pump and make a product that was both beautiful but also really functional. So it's the first flange that has flexible pedals that conform to a woman's body so that we can eliminate that pressure point in those contacts. And then also, it's the first flange with a fully soft touch interior lining. And that soft surface, we had a user test it and say they had to check to see if it was on because it felt so natural against their body. And not only does it feel soft against your body, but it gently holds your tissue in place while you're pumping, so it doesn't get overextended, which can lead to a lot of that pain and discomfort during a pumping session. So that's our first innovation you should keep an eye out for. But also, we have pipeline innovations that are going to integrate some of these therapeutic cues that exist in literature and lactation practice into tools that women can then use when they're not actively engaging with, like, lactation education, and they can still utilize those learnings.
We definitely need to keep an eye on those. And so, Ashley, like you were mentioning, you talked with over 2,000 moms. Is there anything that absolutely jumped out from mostly all these conversations? What was that, like, one thing that stood out for you?
The major thing for me, and the reason I took the leap into entrepreneurship, which was not plan A when I got my PhD, is we put out a customer discovery survey asking about mothers' experiences with pain points at the pump. And we got over 1,200 replies in 24 hours.
Wow.
And that volume alone, I think, speaks to the desperation women have to be heard and seen in the breast pump experience and having these problems be solved for. And the overwhelming response rate out of those 1,200 moms was that 97% of them were dissatisfied with their breast pump experience. Wow. And imagine any other piece of modern technology that we rely on that would exist in the world with a 97% dissatisfaction rate and have that be still so unknown and have this still be such a silent struggle that mothers are facing alone. So that really motivated me and still motivates me to this day. To keep innovating and keep pushing forward on this, because I know the demand is there for better solutions, and I think women should really have more innovations available to them that were made and led by women.
You know, this makes me think about so many things, right? Like how women's health is underinvested. There is a reason why it is. Nobody is even talking and asking. So thank you for asking those questions. It is the way it is because it is a phase in your journey and it's uncomfortable. We all know, and it is not talked about, and then people move on and then new moms come in. And so thank you for making that difference and thank you for doing something about it.
Yeah, I love this conversation today because with five women, five mothers yes. in the room,
yeah.
I feel like we're normalizing a discussion that isn't typically talked about.
Yep.
I mean, maybe one-on-one, but not in a public setting, not, you know, anywhere where you have easy access to it. So I want to thank all of you. Thinking back again kind of to your question, Rashmi, of the 2,000 mothers that you interviewed, let's think of it in the context of going back to work where you said you went to and you had, and that's when you started pumping. Did you get any insights as to what employers can do better or do well for moms that are pumping in the workplace?
Absolutely. I think so many women go back to work and trying to balance pumping with work is incredibly challenging because the expectations of the job don't change, but you have changed so dramatically. And then integrating breast pump sessions into your workday, even with an employer that does allow you those pumping breaks that you legally have and earned, and does provide a space for you to go and pump breast milk, it's incredibly time consuming. And if it's not going well, it's impacting your mental health postpartum. So yes, I think that women are really wanting that experience and that necessity to be seen and understood, and for there to be spaces for them to be comfortable pumping breast milk, and also given the grace to have that adjustment period coming back to work postpartum to figure out how to make all of these new elements of life work together. That's what I wished for. I was lucky I worked remotely, but even so, I felt the pressure of spending 30-minute pump breaks multiple times a day. That takes hours out of my workday. And actually, you know, beyond the general dissatisfaction with the breast pump experience, mm-hmm. the most common thing we hear from moms it's too time consuming. And that goes for working moms and stay-at-home moms. Our lives are busier than ever in modern society, and I feel like moms feel the pressure to do more than ever. So reducing a mother's time at the pump and getting her the results that she's looking for is really solving a big pain point and giving back to her mental health postpartum, experiencing that success, as well as giving that nutrition source to babies.
Yeah, can you touch on that a little bit more? We've talked about mental health and postpartum and the prevalence and how your company and your solutions kind of can help with that aspect of postpartum.
Yeah, again, we're trying to really add dignity to that breast pump experience. And as a company, we want it to be a company that moms feel seen through and a company that moms feel like they can trust, because I think that that's really what moms are looking for is trustworthy solutions that deliver real results and don't take advantage of this really vulnerable time with kind of gimmicks or things that aren't going to deliver what they're seeking, which can just be more demoralizing. So beyond feeling seen and feeling like they can trust these solutions, having our solutions grounded in science and in clinical education and delivering those real results is also something tangible that we can be doing for moms to help them have more experience in achieving their goals, which contributes to positive mental health postpartum.
Absolutely.
We also asked this in customer discovery. Again, we're talking and listening to moms all the time. 90% of them reported that success at the pump impacts their mental health postpartum positively and negatively. So it's really important to their mental health that we help them achieve their goals. Most moms want and try to breastfeed and aren't able to due to a variety of factors. But one of them certainly is the lack of tools to help
Absolutely.
Them do so successfully.
So, Ashley, who are the mothers you want to reach most with your mommy solution? And are there access or equity barriers that, make it harder for you to reach your target audience?
Certainly. Yeah, I mean, and this has been brought up too in this podcast, but I think the NICU experience is near and dear to my heart. I also had a NICU stay with my son My son had failure to thrive and growth restriction in his first year of life. And I remember the intense pressure of the one thing I could do as his mother being providing breast milk for him to try to help him grow, and my inability to nurse him while he was in that NICU and growth restricted state of life. So it becomes the only thing I could think about. And I know in talking with my friends that have had NICU stays that that experience is relatively universal. You can't control a lot in that NICU experience. But the one thing that a lot of moms feel driven to do is provide breast milk to the best of their ability. And even so, with healthcare systems investing in the best of the best hospital grade breast pumps, hospital systems last year had to purchase over 17 million ounces of donor breast milk, which just goes to show the severe shortage that NICU moms are experiencing, which puts the NICU infants at, you know, a degree of increased risk, which is scary. But also, again, think of that mom. She's already going through something she probably never predicted going through. That's incredibly hard and scary. Using the best of the best hospital-grade breast pump technology and still not getting the results that I'm sure she wishes she could. So we actually have partnerships with organizations like Ronald McDonald House and Everyday Miracles to increase access of better, you know, premium, comfortable pumping solutions like our Pedal Soft Flange into those NICU settings to help those moms feel seen and supported and cared for in that time, and hopefully also help them comfortably achieve more milk in less time at that pump.
I think you, I mean, you really landed on something, because hospital-grade pumps, you think, well, it's a hospital-grade pump, I'm going to get a lot of milk. But at the same time, it's a machine attached to your body, and it doesn't feel natural, which plays in your mind a little bit. And so your solution kind of sits right there in between.
Yes.
Correct?
Yeah, it helps you connect to your pump in a way that at least feels more natural with it being soft touch. And I think you touched on something important too that we haven't really emphasized, but breast pumps largely rely on suction power alone. And when an infant is nursing at the breast, there is so much going on with that natural experience of nursing. It's the soft touch of their mouths, the warmth of their mouths, the close fit of their mouth over that nipple. They're not just sucking, they're also using their jaw and their hands against the breast to provide that gentle pressure and that cue to the mom that it's time to release milk quickly and completely. So again, it really hurts my heart that so many moms think it's their personal failure when the breast pump isn't working, because the tool was doomed from the start. You know, it's never going to replicate a baby. It never will perfectly replicate a baby at the breast, but there's so much more we can do to close that gap between infant cues and remote milk collection, and that's really what we're working towards at Mommy's.
So, Ashley, has there been a, have you observed if there is a difference between first-time moms versus second-time moms in their experience both with breastfeeding and using a pump?
I think there are a lot of differences between first-time moms and second-time moms. I don't think that I could say there's a universal truth across the board. I don't know if your experiences would disagree, but you yourself, you know, you struggled to breastfeed your
firstborn. And that's why I'm asking.
And then fed your second for 3 years. Yeah. But some women have the opposite, right? Where they had, they gave it all the first time around and they set an alarm every 2 hours at night to breastfeed or breast pump. And then their second time around, they were like, hey, formula's there, and my mental health was sacrificed too much that first time around, and I'm going to do a combination the second time around. So I don't know that there's a universal truth between what breastfeeding looks like for a first-time mom and a second-time mom, because also that dyad is so different, right? You and your firstborn is different than you and your secondborn. Exactly. Your home environment is different. But I think, again, that's where the beauty of confidence, time, education, and tools plays into it, right? The second-time mom has all of those more than she had the first time around. And that can help her make an informed decision, whatever that decision is. And that agency is really important.
So listening to Brittany's story earlier, and you just mentioned agency, which she really profoundly expressed well, I think. And then listening to Dr. Michelle and her experience, what in that reinforced for you and the work that you're doing and why it matters from what you heard today?
Oh, so much of what I heard today really was inspiring. So thank you to these ladies for joining the podcast as well. I think what I hear in Brittany's story is this strong desire to do as much as she can to be a great mom. And I know that's universal, right? We're all trying our best when we're a mom. We're doing our best for our children, whatever that situation is. And that those moms deserve better support in a multitude of ways, right? Better societal support, better workplace support, better healthcare support, but also better tools. And that's where I step in. It needs to be a little of everything, but I hear Brittany talking about how much she tried, how much she researched, and I know that that is not your story alone. So many moms are seeking better solutions, and we just need to exist so that we can be there when they're searching to give them what they're looking for. And then Michelle's experience, I mean, coming to the home and giving them the time they need and recognizing matrescence in that fourth trimester period. Again, I think we're so focused on the baby that we sometimes forget about the mom. I know that I experienced that with my daughter and my birthing experience. So thinking about just more ways that we can support women in that fourth trimester period benefits not only the baby, but also the mom. So again, if you're going to put in so much effort for a healthy delivery, which we still have a long ways to go on with the maternal mortality rate, we also need to be putting in the effort to make sure that that transition period is there, because with the lack of village in modern society, it is going to take everybody stepping up to recognize we need to support moms postpartum. And even if you're looking at it from like a purely economical point of view, it only benefits us to do so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So can I now ask you to wear your entrepreneur and research hat and the research that you do? And there are digital tools now. There are telehealth solutions that help support lactation. Where do you see technology playing a meaningful role outside of just the breast pump in this whole journey?
I think it's really important, again, because our healthcare systems, they do have so many deserts. So there are so many moms who don't have access to lactation education and should or want to. And technology can help be a bridge for those moms that are seeking real evidence-based support that can't find a lactation consultant near to them, which is a large part of the country. So I'm grateful to see a lot of tech-enabled solutions. And we have some founder friends that also create lactation spaces in workplaces, so fully equipped lactation rooms. We have friends that create lactation pods that can be put anywhere. I think, you know, this innovation across the board, as hard as it is to get women-led innovation off the ground, there's also a lot of it happening. And I think that that is so exciting because it's the perseverance and the determination of women to be there for women. It's kind of the modern way of showing up as a village for our other moms in society. And technology is going to help, spaces are going to help, and tools are going to help.
Ashley, if you could send those links for employer support tools that are available, we would love to add those to our show notes so they get more visibility and people know.
Yeah, shout out.
Yes.
Shout out Mamava. Shout out Milkmate. Milkmate is actually going to be a partner of Mommies. So again, there are a lot of opportunities for innovators in this space to partner in working together to create that linked community for those fourth trimester moms.
Ashley, Rashmi mentioned that you won the 2025 Healthcare MN Startup of the Year. You were the grand prize winner in the Minnesota Cup in 2025. What does it mean to you personally to be doing this work here in Minnesota?
Minnesota is such an incredible place to start Mommies, and we certainly wouldn't have gotten to where we have gotten today without the support of the Minnesota startup community. We were supported by Launch Minnesota Grants, Healthcare Minnesota, Minnesota Cup, also Walleye Tank.
Yes, shout out.
which is Minnesota's Shark Tank, for those who might not know. And really what I find in Minnesota that I think is hard to find elsewhere is that a lot of businesses here and a lot of the startup community here really supports businesses that are built with heart. So we are building a business that's very mission-driven. It doesn't mean that it's not a high-growth, scalable business. That's very exciting for all of the reasons entrepreneurship is exciting. But behind it is a huge heart and empathy and mission. And I think Minnesota is unique in that we are platforming startups that we want to represent breakthroughs for the next generation of healthcare and what clinical care looks like next. But we also really spotlight founders who are doing this from a place of lived empathy. And I think that those are some of the most inspiring founders that I've met and the ones that I trust to take it all the way in the right direction, because they know exactly the target they're shooting towards. It's what they missed in their own experience. And I think that that's education that can't be replaced.
I totally agree. So Ashley, where you are in your journey today, what support do you need going forward, and where do you want to move with Mommies? What, like, you know, for listeners out there who are listening today, how can they help?
Yeah, well, of course, you can follow us on socials. We have the handle Love Mommies, and our website is mymommies.com. We'd love for added visibility and support. Millions of moms use a breast pump every year, so there are a lot of people that we're trying to reach, and sharing our mission is one way to do so. We're launching our first product this summer, and then we're also an NIH-supported company, and we're hoping that we can do clinical work down the line and be one of the leading publishers in this field as well. Again, trying to bridge that evidence-based practice and evidence-based R&D with really elegantly designed solutions that are designed for moms.
So I think you touched on this a bit. When you look ahead 5 years, where do you want not only Mommies to be, but so what does success look like for your company, but also for the mothers that you are helping?
Yeah, I mean, the big vision statement is I want Mommies to be the first brand women think of for success at the pump. I would really love to be synonymous with that. And something that we're really intentional about is building trust. And that is with relationships across the board. It's with moms, it's with lactation consultants, it's with healthcare systems, it's with the NIH. So really, I'm hoping to have that reputation both with moms and with healthcare so that we can start to bridge that, because I think that's part of the challenge in helping moms in this postpartum period is the fragmentation between, you know, healthcare and moms and the limited opportunities to bridge those interactions. So yes, that's where I see us in 5 years, hopefully with a portfolio of solutions. We know every mom is unique, so we know that there are more innovations to put out into the world so that everybody can find the tool that they're looking for. And whether they're near or far from healthcare resources, they have something at home to help them standardly apply trusted techniques.
Great. Thank you.
No, this is beautiful. Yeah. I feel so fortunate that we are surrounded by such innovators and, like, you know, genuinely trying to solve problems. And each one of you, right, coming from your own experiences, we get so many guests who do talk about that, and that, like, you know, when you have had a problem, you're trying to solve it, it comes from the heart and it shows in your work. So thank you, all three of you. You are doing the work you are doing, and wishing you all the success and luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to Brittany Runk, Dr. Michelle Haggerty, and Ashley Mooningham for bringing your honesty, your expertise, and your hearts to this conversation. Rashmi, what stood out to you today?
Oh, God, a lot of things, but I think the main one was, I could relate to it, that your journey is your journey alone. And don't compare it with others. I think that was my take-home message from it. It just, we often end up, in, especially in these phases where the answers are unclear, there are more questions than there are answers. And then you're looking at other people, you're looking at social media, you're looking, like, you know, hearing from other moms around you. And so just if we could all remember this one thing, that everyone has a unique journey.
Absolutely. For me, it was really positioning breastfeeding as about the mother and the whole body and the baby, and not just a feeding mechanism. I think when I went through it, it was about feeding, and it didn't really matter where I was, where my mental health was, where my physical health was. It was, you got to feed that baby, or
yes,
those babies.
I agree. Yeah.
And so today, to hear kind of the depth of the conversation that the three of them brought to our table around mental health and physical and support and workplace and everything that supports the mother, I think that I love that we're having this conversation.
Yeah, no, I agree to that wholeheartedly. And And maybe we can like send a message to moms that the struggle you're feeling is real and it is not a reflection of how much you love your baby and there is help that exists. You just have to ask for it, and there are amazing innovations coming out in the market. So reach out, you know, to people who are innovating and try these new solutions out. Maybe there is an answer for you.
Absolutely. And the idea of bringing technology to this topic, I mean, Brittany in her role as a content creator and Dr. Michelle and what she does in the fourth trimester.
Yeah.
And then Ashley with her technology that she's bringing in the companies that she mentioned. I feel like for the first time in a long time, there is like extra help, you know, in addition to what mothers already get at the hospital and with lactation consultants, et cetera. I think technology is a great entrance to this to this topic.
Yeah, and hope it keeps moving in the right direction.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we'll be back next month with another exciting topic. And until next time,
be healthy, be strong,
keep innovating.